The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at cooperadio.org.
Well, on today's show, we're hearing about a resident of the downtown east side, an SRO in the neighborhood, in fact, Joaquin Foycas, who was, for a time in the 1960s, Vancouver's official town fool. He dressed like a jester, had donkeys pulling a cart around the city to protest cars and air pollution, and spent numerous nights in jail for organizing illegal and unauthorized street parties, including in the downtown east side at Pigeon Park. And he was awarded $26,000 in today's money from the Canada Council for the Arts to do his bizarre stunts. Here's a clip Donaldson put together using footage from a documentary in 1968 of Foycas, who died at age 72 in 2007.
We've got a major problem facing the city of Vancouver. We've got a scum community.
This is Fourth Avenue, an area of Vancouver that houses Canada's largest hippie population.
They are poets and they're painters or they're philosophers. But what they're doing in taking these drugs they think are mind expanding are really destroying their minds.
You don't really think then that the hardcore of hippies could possibly be our next philosophers.
They don't want responsibility. They don't want restraints.
I want to be a mythic character. And I want to create a legend, a Vancouver legend. My costume is my medium. I call it joyful symmetry. The red symbolizes the blood and the flesh, and blue symbolizes vision, spirit, the integration of body and spirit, the marriage of heaven and hell. So I'm the sort of imp, you know. I'm the rising devil, with my devil's horn. The cock does crow to let you know, if you are wise, it is time to rise. That's all I know. Suddenly it came to me as a fantastic vision that everything is turned outside in, upside down. I saw I had to invert the existing social order and reverse its values. My goal is to reach for the bottom, not for the top.
I want to be a catalyst to the imagination.
To demonstrate this, I carry my bubble upside down. My bubble with its fool's head and bell is my scepter. I throw my bubble in the air all the time. Once in a while, it falls on the ground. Many people will laugh at this lack of dexterity. The bubble falls on the ground all the time. But I don't think the clown on the bubble is going to be upset about it. So you see, I laugh about myself and the folly of the world. Like the bubble, I don't get upset with living in this fallen world. My purpose is to live joyfully for nothing. I put this costume on my back to add a little bit of color, a little bit of red and blue to the city. This is the way I express my folly. Not by being a writer or a professor or teacher, or librarian, or magistrate, or policeman, but by being a fool.
I am a student of theology and philosophy. Instead of becoming a preacher, I decided to become a fool. People say, what's the difference?
There was a mad man, and he had a mad wife, and they lived in a mad town. And they had three children at a birth, and mad they were everyone. The father was mad, and the mother was mad, and the children mad beside. And they all got on a mad horse, and madly they did ride. They rode by night and they rode by day, yet never a one of them fell. They rode so madly all the way, till they came to the gates of hell. Old Nick was glad to see them so mad, and gladly let them in. But he soon grew sorry to see them so merry, and let them out again. People have been saying, what an idiot, what a crackpot, or what a madman, for the last 12 months. My only answer is Blake. I do not mock thee, but by thee I mock it. Thou callest me madman, but I call thee blockhead.
A very strange and...
My purpose is to contribute to the imagination explosion.
The reality of most people is an illusion. My revelation was only a glimpse of reality, and I'm still a fool. Because even seeing and knowing is folly, being is divine. My vision was so fantastic that I worry sometimes it could be an illusion. I sound so cocksure when I talk about reality and illusion. But at heart, who is cocksure about these ultimate things, you see? I'm not the universal fool. I'm only reviving a tradition. I'm not the fool. And I hope others will come who will be suitable as fools for other people who need a different looking glass. So I can only hope that some better fool comes along sometime who will take over the bubble for me and act it out perhaps better and more effectively. So I can go back to my books and my home and take off this costume and burn it and be on my own and have my freedom completely. What place can there be for a minstrel now against these ghastly times? For one who would sing to a light guitar his little roguish rhymes while the pain and filth of war go on and we lack for bread. Oh, the dark fool is loose in the world and the fool of joy is dead. Well, the fool of joy is reborn.
Jesse Donaldson is an historian and has published a book with Anvil Press on Fool's Gold, the life and legacy of Vancouver's official town fool. Jesse, it's great to have you on The Pulse. Thanks for joining us on Co-op Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me. Happy 2021.
Yeah, happy New Year. So it's great to have you on here, and you've been writing some great books over the recent years. You're such a people's historian, I'd say, of our city, writing about wild and greedy real estate booms of our past and weird ass histories of our city that, you know, are underground and strange.
Yeah.
And you found, I think, maybe the strangest episode from our city's history, I believe.
I would argue that it is not the strangest, but then again, as you say, maybe I think weird ass history might actually be my genre from now on. Thank you. I appreciate that you've defined it. And I mean, that's always been what pulled me into writing about history in the first place, was just finding the weird stuff, because we're so brought up in, you know, school and stuff to learn a lot of names and dates. But the more that you look into people, people are the weirdest thing of all. And there's a lot of weirdness in, especially in Vancouver's history. It's a very sort of surreal place. And there's so many moments where you're like, that happened? What?
Yeah. Oh, you've been doing actually like physical tours pre-COVID at the police museum.
That's right.
Your weird ass history, like right here on the downtown east side?
Yeah, I spent a couple of years working with the Vancouver Police Museum doing they've been doing I mean, I guess there's a bit of a cottage industry in crime tours that you know, circumnavigate the downtown east side, but these folks had been doing it for a long time before that, probably 10 years. Yeah, and I was doing walking tours on sort of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. There was one on sort of the prostitution industry, which went through a lot of iterations in early Vancouver. There was a tour on the opium trade and the drug trade. There was one on bootlegging. So yeah, it was definitely something. I was interested in history before that, but doing those walking tours definitely focused my interest on the weird and wonderful elements of it, as opposed to, you know, who was mayor at what time.
Although, speaking of walking, let's talk about Joaquim Focus. Is that how you say his name? Focus?
Focus, yeah.
Joaquim Focus was Vancouver's official town fool.
Yes. Well, that was the best. That was the best segue I've ever heard in my life, by the way. I just have to say.
Thank you. Your book, Fool's Gold, The Life and Legacy of Vancouver's Official Town Fool, documents Joaquim Focus's incredible interventions, arts performances, criticisms. What do you want to, how do you describe this guy?
He was, yeah, his title, and it was official for a period of time because he got a grant from the federal government to be Vancouver's town fool. So, I mean, he was Vancouver's official town fool, but that's a bit of a misleading title. He was more of a street philosopher, really. He was someone who was equal parts performance artist, philosopher, academic, someone who brought this weird kind of gospel of Mother Goose, as he called it, to the streets of Vancouver. And he would bring it up to people and kind of throw a little bit of surreal fairy dust in their faces. And he did that
but he wore a jester costume.
He did.
Like, he's not just a street philosopher or a street preacher. He is wearing a jester costume.
Yes. He was a street philosopher and a performance artist. Yeah. He had his wife make him a jester's outfit, half red, half blue, little cap and bells. He had a staff that a Gastown cobbler made for him that had a fool's head on it. He was reviving this sort of ancient tradition that had gone all the way through the ancient world into Elizabethan England of, you know, the fool being this looking glass, you know, this sort of funhouse mirror that would be held up to the world to ridicule it for all of its, for all of its kind of preconceptions and for its pomposity. So he'd be thumbing his nose at polite society.
And he had a Downtown East Side connection. I understand that he lived in an SRO down here for some time.
He did later on in his life. His biggest connection to the Downtown East Side before that, because he was Vancouver's town fool for a couple of years, officially 1967, 68, 69. And he actually capped off his fool career with, he would stage these things called happenings, these big dance parties oftentimes, and he kept getting arrested for causing a disturbance. And one of the biggest things he did was he went down to what's now Pigeon Park, bought $500 worth of musical instruments, handed them out, and threw the most epic dance party that the city had ever seen. And this was in mid-1968, and, you know, just gave out instruments to everybody. And there was singing, dancing, and it actually started a tradition that went on for weeks after that, every week. And then every month. And so he was all about staging these big happenings. And the biggest and most widely reported one was in what's now Pigeon Park. And then he went off to Lascelles Island for a while and then returned years later and lived in an SRO on near Main and Hastings. Spent a lot of time at Carnegie and was still doing the same thing, you know, walking around talking to people about life, the universe, and everything. He just didn't necessarily have the cap and bells anymore.
Tell me what he did with his Federal Canada Council for the Arts funding. What are some of his more notable performance pieces or interventions?
He was definitely operating on a smaller scale before he got the grant. And then the grant was awarded, fittingly enough, on April 1st, 1968. the first thing he did was go down to City Hall and take a lot of questions and literally turn around and thumb his nose at the then mayor, Tom Campbell, who was just a very curmudgeonly kind of old, it was like everyone's worst grandpa, you know, or like most bigoted relative at Thanksgiving. So he was the kind of person that, he was the kind of person that, you know, people in the counterculture didn't like. And so that was his first real official act as the town fool. But he, other than buying random musical instruments and just handing them out to people and snarling up traffic for hours at a time, he got in a car accident, a very minor car accident, at which point he gave up his car and used his grant money to buy a cart and two donkeys. And he would travel around Vancouver that way. And they moved donkey speeds, so he would be in traffic on the road and people would be pulling around him. And, you know, he was trying to raise awareness about pollution and, you know, sort of animal rights. And he spent a year with these things and they kept getting impounded. So he kept having to use money from his grant to get them out of the city pound. And he would try and move them around in secret. That's definitely my favorite of his uses of the money. And that went on for about a year.
And it's, the thing is it just about pollution for him, or is he kind of making a statement about, you know, cars versus pedestrians? I mean, we have car free days now, but for a long time, Vancouver, you know, we had critical masses. We had unauthorized street parties. We had a lot of commentary about why cars seem to be so supreme here.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. It was about pollution, but yeah, it was also about the sort of car mindset and, you know, commuting. His whole point was to be poking fun at what he called the four pillars of society. And those were, you know, conformity, respectability, you know, money, and an obsession with success. So in most of his happenings or events would be trying to poke fun at those. He showed up at an architectural summit with a troop of mimes once and a loaf of bread and just started handing out bread to people and had all these mimes in the audience, for example. It was just very real, just our surreal kind of gestures that would make you think about the inherent weirdness of the world itself.
Tell me a little bit about his background.
He was a Polish immigrant. He grew up, spent his early years in Poland in what was the Silesia region, which was actually one of the last regions in Europe where the fool tradition existed after it had died out across the rest of Europe. It was one of the last places where that tradition was alive. And then when he was young, his parents split up and he moved to Germany and went to a university in Berlin that had just been founded and was like mostly kind of a free thinker's paradise. He doesn't talk a lot about his early life and it was hard to find a lot of information about it. He discussed, you know, going through some very traumatic events. I mean, you know, cities being bombed and, and like just sort of being surrounded by a lot of civil war in his younger years, a lot of civil strife, things like that. And then he left for Canada pretty quickly. He hadn't seen his father in years and years and years. He had a brother, but he didn't really stay in contact with them. His mother ran a toy shop when he was a boy. It's interesting to look at somebody like this, where there are sort of broad swaths of his life that were really hard to access. And his childhood was definitely one of them. It was a lot of digging through archives, a lot of them in Polish. And it was a bit of a struggle, but it doesn't sound like he had the easiest childhood.
So it's interesting, the jester is sort of similar in a way to a public clown. And we think of clowns as being kind of these funny joke people, but I know in European traditions, clowns are kind of a shadow side. They're able to express some more difficult things. Is the jester kind of like that? What's the tradition?
The jester is exactly like that. I mean, there's a very huge difference, I think, between clowns and fools. The fool tradition was about holding a looking glass up to the world around you. Essentially, that was the fool is intended as a mirror, is intended to sort of show you this warped reflection of your world and some of your own preconceived notions about yourself and where you exist. It's fools are not even necessarily funny. They're sort of more of a dose of reality. And that's why for a while they were in fashion in Europe, because they were the only ones who could speak truth to power. And that was...
In fact, I think king's courts would sometimes have a jester character who was the only person who wouldn't get his head chopped off most of the time.
Yep, most of the time. Yeah, every now and then.
There were a few, though, I think, that went too far.
There were. And I mean, very few of them ended up dead, but a number of them ended up excommunicated because, sometimes you would take it too far. And sometimes that's the danger of speaking truth to power, is that they don't always like it. And Joachim Fuegus' whole purpose was to do exactly that, was to, as he would say, wake Vancouver up. And have us all look at ourselves. And he took it very seriously. He took the art of folly very seriously. He was an academic. He had multiple university degrees and he studied this stuff. He could quote Mother Goose. He could quote Shakespeare. He could quote Socrates. He could quote William Blake, and he would regularly. And he would have nursery rhymes because he felt like the fool allowed us to use this nursery rhyme tradition in these images to sort of give us bigger universal truths. And a number of people that I interviewed about him said that talking to him wasn't necessarily funny. At times it was actually quite unsettling.
Unsettling, like in what way? Like unstable?
No. In that he was by all accounts a very gentle, very pleasant man. He just sometimes the truth is uncomfortable. And things can be funny and uncomfortable all at the same time. And so being confronted with sometimes uncomfortable truths, not everybody liked it.
Not to mention complete weirdness and unpredictability.
Well, exactly.
Which kind of reminds me of how politicians used to react to like Nardwar the human serviette.
Yeah, he's a really good example because, he comes across as this kind of clown character. But in some ways and in some interviews, he's really reflected people back at themselves. There's some musicians and things like that who just absolutely hate Nardwar, and then there are others who are like, this is the best interview I've ever done in my life. You're so prepared, you know everything there is to know. You took an academic approach to learning about me and my career. And it seems like kind of got the joke when it came to Joachim Fuegus. I mean, at least politicians and things like that. A lot of people, I mean, he was quite famous all around Canada and internationally as well. He would get recognized on trips to California sometimes.
And it was the summer of love.
Yep.
So put that in context, probably there was a lot of weird ass stuff.
Well,
it
was the imagination explosion. I mean, it was what it was being alternatively called. And it was this interesting time where I'm not sure that he would have necessarily been as big a deal now, because he might've just gotten swallowed up in the churn of the daily news cycle. But it was the summer of love. It was this explosion of music coming out from San Francisco, and a lot of people were experimenting with psychedelic drugs and the sort of ego emancipation that comes from that. And sort of, there was a lot more free thinkers. The youth hippie counterculture was on the rise. So there was just all of these things that set the stage, as it were, for him to pop up and start contributing all of these weird insights. But it's interesting because the world that he was poking fun at and the world that he was trying to reflect back, it doesn't look a lot different from our own.
There's a sort of, it's almost like a, you mentioned a looking glass. I'm almost thinking of it as being like an, almost an anti-smugness canon. Like if you're patting yourselves in the back and you think everything in our society is going tickety-boo and is working along fine, someone like that comes and kind of prods you into questioning it, or at least feeling uncomfortable enough for a few moments to think about
it. Yeah, so it's about shaking people out of their complacency or and he would say that over and over again. He would say that everybody in Vancouver is asleep, you know, they need to be woken up. You know, and that just means to sort of take a look at the world and look at what's messed up about it and what's weird and like speaking truth to power and poking fun at these pillars of society, right? And trying to examine the values that we all collectively share and ask ourselves, do we share them? Should we be sharing them? Is our obsession with things like material wealth and success, is that healthy? Is it good for us? Or is it just kind of ridiculous?
I mean, you talk about shared sense of values. I think with COVID and the Trump era, we don't even have a shared sense of reality anymore.
Yeah. And that was definitely something I was thinking about while writing this book, and it made it seem a little bit more timely, is that we live in a very unreasonable world populated by a lot of very unreasonable people. And it was nice to have an excuse to run screaming in the other direction and sort of embrace unreason for a little while, but more of a studied and kind of willing unreason than just this reactive insanity. I mean, there's a lot of morons and fools in positions of power. And so having somebody like him point that out is maybe not helpful, but it's certainly cathartic to be like, oh, thank God, I'm not the only one who's noticed.
What, the people like doing fake Zoom broadcasts from Caribbean islands pretending they're here enjoying their eggnog?
Yeah, I am so past the point now. I mean, that's like, that was a Simpsons joke 20 years ago, and now it's reality.
Literally in 1994.
Yeah, and then, you know, I mean, obviously the Donald Trump presidency was a Simpsons joke that became reality too, but I think I'm kind of done with Simpsons jokes becoming reality at this point, but that may not be the last of them.
We've already got the monorail here. I mean, that's the SkyTrain.
That's true. Yes,
we're good to go.
That's right. Yeah, we're good. It's just all Simpsons plot lines from now on. The writers of the plot line of our universe have just kind of run out of ideas, and now they're just recycling Simpsons plot lines.
Foikas passed away at age 72, and it seems that he had moved to Victoria, and he went in a way that was seemingly fairly fitting for a lifelong jester or fool.
He did. Yeah, it was very, very fitting. It's sort of somewhere, it's poetic, somewhere between kind of tragedy and comedy. He'd been living there for a few years after he left the Downtown East Side. He was in a communal house, and he'd been known throughout his career, and he'd been arrested multiple times for these street dance parties, or he would beat a drum and get everybody dancing and connecting as human beings, not just in that Pigeon Park party I mentioned, but quite regularly. And so he was walking with a friend near in Victoria's Inner Harbor. There was a band. They were playing music. He was dancing. He stumbled and he took a tumble over the high wall in Victoria's Inner Harbor. And that was the end of that. And it's fitting just in all of these ways because, you know, it was he went out dancing, first of all. And second of all, he used to preach the sort of gospel of Humpty Dumpty. And he had taken this great fall himself at the very end there. The metaphors are almost too convenient in some ways. I had actually somebody reach out to me yesterday or the day before to be like, oh, this guy sounds a lot like someone that I used to serve at a coffee shop in North Van. Is he still with us? And I said, well, no, he died in 2007. But based on that comment, now a very small part of me is going, maybe just, if there was ever anyone who was going to fake it and get it in the newspapers, it would be him, and that would be the greatest stunt he ever pulled.
Well, thank you so much for finding out about this guy and bringing him to us. He's such an interesting piece of Vancouver's and the Downtown East Side's history, but I think just, you know, we need jesters and satire and some prodding out of our complacency.
Exactly. It's what's going to get us through this year, the next year, and all the years after that.
Exactly. Well, thanks so much, Jesse. Happy New Year. Stay healthy and safe, and keep on writing. Thank you for this.
Same to you. Thanks a lot.
And that was Jesse Donaldson. He's a historian in Vancouver. His latest book is called Fool's Gold, The Life and Legacy of Vancouver's Official Town Fool.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.